Hello, welcome to episode 10 of the Structure and Interpretation of Computer Programmers podcast. Once again, a bored man has got access to a microphone and is going to use it to be wrong on the internet. And the topic I'm going to be wrong about on this episode is build systems. So tools which are used by programmers and by users of software to compile sources, translate assets, create packages, anything else that takes the inputs created by the project team and converts them into a product that will be used by the customers. That is a definition from my book, Appropriate Behavior, of course, link in the show notes. And that's kind of the fact that it's in this book is an explanation of my motivation for talking about the subject. The idea of the Appropriate Behavior book was that it would be all of the subjects that a programmer needs to know about that aren't the actual programming, the actual sort of typing of the codes into the text editor. So a sort of curriculum, if you like, for software engineering. And build tools are a very important part of the programmer experience, and as I alluded to in that definition, also sometimes the user experience. There's plenty of software out there that is distributed source only, and there's plenty of like workflows that are automated using tools that came from the software build system world. Now, that definition was kind of purpose driven. It was about turning the materials and the resources that the production team work with into the products that the users are going to interact with. But actually the purpose of a build system really sort of depends on your goal. I mean, it's always used to automate some repetitive collection of tasks. Every time you create a new version of your software, you rebuild it. Every time you try to reconstruct an existing version from the same sources, you're going to rebuild it. So there's always an element of automation. Often the automation is for simplicity as well. You want to take a complex task, such as compiling multiple files, multiple source files into assembly, and then assembling those files into object files, and then linking those object files into libraries and into an executable, and then connecting the executable to some dynamic libraries. That's all a very big and complex task, and so we create tools to automate it and to simplify it. But there are other sort of side goals or other properties that are sometimes desired alongside that automation or simplification. So often people want to ensure reproducible builds, that given a particular collection of source assets, say your source code repository at a particular commit, you get exactly the same artifacts out. And there are some build systems that deliberately enable that, and there are some that don't, and thus allow for non-reproducible builds. For example, Maven will often download packages over network links if it finds it needs that to resolve a dependency. And then obviously the product you get out depends on what file is being served by the server when the request is made. So it is possible for that request to change, for their response to change over time, and therefore for the built artifact to change. Often, particularly with open source software, portability is a key requirement of a build system. The software is designed such that it will work on multiple platforms, or maybe the software was designed to work on one platform but has been configured to enable it to work on other platforms. That's actually a more common case. And so there are parts of the build system that look at the target environment and configure the compilation step so that it uses the variables or the settings that are appropriate to the target environment. And that's why AutoConf and like the GNU AutoTools scripts can often be really, really complex. No discussion of build systems would be complete without mentioning AutoTools, which is both one of the most widely used, certainly in the open source, and even in the sort of proprietary packaged Unix tools world these days. But it's also one of the most complex. That's kind of because it grew through a collection of accretions and accidents rather than being a sort of designed tool. And therefore, a lot of the tools that came afterwards are attempts to deliberately design something that cleans up the interaction of the developers and the users with auto tools while still providing a similarly flexible experience and set of capabilities. So let's look at AutoConf and the other auto tools in a bit more detail. There's a history of Make, which is at the center of the GNU Auto Project build system, in a book called The Art of Unix Programming by Eric Raymond. And it talks about, the author talks about sort of noticing that his colleagues were doing CC to invoke the C compiler with like the *.c option to build their executables. So basically building or compiling all of the source files. Or if they were just linking, then they'd do CC *.o. So they would tell the compiler to link all of the object files together. And they were both spending time compiling things that they didn't need to compile, and they were sometimes like not compiling things that they did need to compile. So there was both a false negative and a false positive error on the tasks that were performed in producing their artifacts. In fact, one of the people involved had been trying for hours to track down a bug, only to discover that they had actually fixed the bug at the beginning of their time debugging, but had ever since then, whenever they invoked the compiler, they had failed to compile that fix into the built target. So Make was a quick solution to this. It was designed using the Yak compiler generator, which was being built in the same team. And so without much expertise in using Yak, Make was designed with this idea that rules are defined on lines that contain a single tab character at the front. And by the time anyone realized how bad this was, there were already a handful, I think it's about a dozen users of the tool. And so that syntax stayed because they didn't want to break things for existing people. And what Make does is, it's actually a very simple system that nonetheless allows for very powerful workflows. At its core is a list of files and dependencies between files, and then rules, which are effectively shell commands that will run in order to generate one file given a set of other files. So you can imagine a tree, or at least a graph of where you've got a destination file that's probably your executable, or is definitely your built product, and then to get that, there are a bunch of files that need to exist, and a transformation step that generates the end result from those files. But then perhaps from each of those files, there may be a collection of links from other files that can be used to generate that. And it's an intermediate, not a source file. And then the steps that would generate that intermediate file from the other files. And that can go on arbitrarily long. And make uses the timestamp in the file system of the various files to decide what it wants to do. So build up this graph and then look at the modification time of the built output and decide whether it is more recent than the modification time on the inputs. And if it is, then it doesn't need to do anything. But if it isn't, then it needs to refresh that output file by performing the commands in the rule to generate it. But even at the beginning of its time, you know, the make authors were using special rules like all to build all other targets. But that doesn't create a file called all. That just does all of the things that are listed as dependencies. And special targets called clean that remove the various built artifacts. These days, GNU Make has an setting where you can say that a target is phony, in which case Make knows that it isn't going to cause a file to be created and so doesn't bother checking. But that's not true of the original versions of Make and of some of the sort of forks of it. So it's possible to create a file called all in the folder, and then make all won't do anything because the all file looks like it's up to date. Make is very powerful, but it's also arbitrarily complex. And this idea of using the timestamps on the file systems rather than, say, hashes of the source files themselves or the target files means it can be hard to ensure that a build process is actually reproducible and reliable. So there are two good papers discussing the problems people have with Make. One is called Why Johnny Can't Build. And it's actually, the full title is Why Johnny Can't Build Portable Scientific Software. And that describes the problems found in the scientific community where teams are spending 10 to 30% of their time solving problems with build systems rather than constructing software. And then there's a good one called Recursive Make Considered Harmful, which shows how efforts to simplify build systems based on Make by partitioning them up into like subfolders which build their local targets can cause problems where some dependencies aren't tracked, problems where too much building is done, and also problems where Make takes a really long time just to work out what it's going to build. So you can have a build process that takes a couple of minutes in order to not actually do any compilation, because that's how long it takes this recursive procedure to discover that no work needs to be done. Interestingly, there's a response paper by some of the authors of the Glasgow Haskell compiler called Non-Recursive Make Considered Harmful, which shows that there are complexities and problems associated with all of the fixes that the original author came up with to address the problems with recursive Make. And thus they conclude that they don't want to use Make at all, and they describe building a different system that was sort of bespoke for compiling the Haskell compiler. Now, Make is kind of at the core of like the standard GNU Auto Tools build system, a collection of utilities. You would know that you were using a GNU-based build if your set of commands in the README that you see in order to compile the project starts with a script called ./configure and then make, and then make install. You know, it's not guaranteed that configure is from the GNU system, but it's very likely that this was a file that was generated from GNU Autoconf. Autoconf is a tool that runs a set of macros that are created in a language called M4 that then those macros generate shell scripts and C files that are used to test the configuration of the computer that you're building your software on in order to provide information to the subsequent parts of the build process. So in order to like generate or modify a make file, for example, to work with configuration that's going to run successfully on the build system. And that's obviously quite a complex set of scripts. You've got these M4 scripts, and then they're generating like shell scripts and C files. Then they're using your compiler. Hopefully they're using the correct compiler, although that's something that can go wrong with these things. And then that is all being used as input into maybe C header files or other scripts or make files, which are then being used to build your system. So there's a lot of moving parts, and not all of these parts are particularly well understood in the community. It's been a long time since there's been any decent documentation on like programming with the GNU tools. And so a lot of systems that use them are built from a kind of like collective memory, trial and error, copy and paste. So you get some very complex systems. There's an article in the ACMQ by Poul Henning Kamp, who is one of the FreeBSD developers, called A Generation Lost in the Bazaar, which is an allusion to Eric Raymond, who we encountered earlier, who wrote a book called The Cathedral and the Bazaar, which was about the difference between open source being this kind of collaborative bazaar-like environment where you can, you know, take and pick from a lot of small or independent people who are all contributing something interesting, versus like a sort of proprietary environment where everything is provided from on high by the priests in the cathedral. And PHK says that this leads to bad design because nobody is responsible for the design, and she uses build systems as an example. So for example, he talks about the number of make files there are in the FreeBSD tree to build all of the different components that FreeBSD uses, number of times that libraries are tested for that don't actually appear in the end result product. The Firefox web browser, when he built it, couldn't view TIFF files and yet needed libtiff because it was required somewhere in this complex collection of build scripts and configure tools and whatever. So, you know, that very much was the state of the art for a long time. It's still a very popular build system, and you can kind of see everything that came after it as a reaction somehow to the GNU world of having autoconf and GNU make and this kind of configure, make, install dance. So the Why Johnny Can't Build paper referred to iMake, which was an attempt to kind of clean up the syntax of make files, make them easier to understand. Jam, which was an open source project that was actually used in versions of Project Builder on Mac OS X in the very early phase of Mac OS X's life. The next step, Project Builder, used make files and had the problem that not only was Project Builder working on these make files, but that people would edit them themselves as well, because you know, it was a common format. And so it had to be able to read the files even after people had changed them. They tried to kind of limit that by putting in two inclusion points where you could put custom files which were entirely up to you, and then leave the project make file alone, but it would import these other things. But of course, if the inclusions changed the meaning of anything that happened in the project file, that still caused issues. So early versions of Project Builder for Mac OS X switched to a build tool called Jam, which was very much designed with knowledge of how to build C and C++ and presumably Objective-C projects built in a similar way to like makes intrinsic rules. However, it did things like automatically tracking dependencies, which make doesn't do. So if you have a C file and the C file is part of an executable, Jam knows that any header files it includes should also be considered dependencies, and if they change, then the product needs rebuilding. Why Johnny Can't Build also refers to a build tool that's seen particular use in the scientific computing and high performance computing world called SCONS, or software construction, and that's not really seen anywhere else. There are other tools. I typically these days, if I'm working with a C or C++ project, would choose CMake, which is not the newest tool on the block. You know, it's also quite an old thing. What CMake really does is sort of act as a front end to something like Make in a similar way that AutoConf does. But rather than providing options that can be inserted into a file as macro expansions or as like a kind of configuration file, it will generate the Make file itself, and it can also generate project files that can be used by other tools like the JetBrains tools or the Xcode or Visual Studio or a different build system from Make. So it's common to use CMake with Ninja, which is very similar to Make but with far fewer configuration options and features. So all it does is the rules and the testing whether the files need building, and it tends to be much faster, particularly if you're generating your Ninja files, so you don't need them to be readable by anybody. You can just put all of your sources and all of your dependencies in one file, and it can build up the whole tree of all of the files and all of the changes that need to be taken into account, unlike the system we saw with the recursive make files in Recursive Make Considered Harmful. But there are tons and tons of other tools out there as well. What I often do is just use whatever is idiomatic. So yeah, that if I'm building a Python project, I would typically try not to have a make file or any kind of build system at all, because Python itself is a build system. When it loads a module, it compiles that module to bytecode and saves the bytecode, but it saves it in a cache and it keeps that cache up to date. So there is a compilation step in Python and there is dependency management in Python, but it's all taken care of. And you know, I'd use Xcode's built-in build system if I'm working on like a iOS project, a Swift project. I wouldn't build my own thing in Make, even though that's possible, or in any other tool. But then sometimes there isn't a clear winner. You know, like there are ecosystems where you obviously do one thing. Interestingly, on the web, it's very common to use Webpack as a build tool, where the input is often JavaScript and the output is often JavaScript as well. But what you're doing is taking human-readable JavaScript that is in multiple files, that uses modular decomposition and importing of different modules, that uses new language features or even sort of typed idioms like TypeScript or Flow, and then converting that into browser-compatible JavaScript, which uses only the features that are available in the browsers that you're targeting, and that also creates a single file that it tries to cut out anything that's unused and create the smallest single package that can just be deployed to the browser. In other contexts, there isn't that clear example of a single tool to use. So if you look at like the Amiga Smalltalk project, I think there are now three different makefiles in the repository. There are actually four that exist, so I just haven't committed one of them. And that's because the different build contexts require different build tools, or at least work best having defined different build tools. So we've got a makefile that works with VBCC, which is a particular C compiler that produces Amiga Motorola 68000 machine language. We've got one for GCC when you're compiling with the AX runtime, or sorry, linking with the AX runtime on a Linux computer. We use AROS's MetaMake, which is essentially a tool that takes a specification for building a makefile and then builds that makefile. So that's a generator. And then I've also got one for the HiSoft C compiler on the Amiga. Now, one thing I could do is to sort of rationalize that by picking a particular development environment and sticking with it. Another is that I could rationalize it by creating a single project file that works in all of those contexts. Likely that would have to then be configurable. So we'd have this two-stage thing, like with GNUtools, where there's a configure step and then a make step, or with CMake, where there is CMake, which generates the build tool, and CMake generates the build script, and then whatever build tool, it reads that script and constructs the artifact. So that's build systems. That was definitely an overview of their history and of why there are so many and the problems that newer tools are trying to address that were encountered in the older tools. Far from exhaustive, far from complete, and I'm sure there are tons of examples, things like Buck and Bazel that people are using, or like the Java-based ones like Gradle and Maven that you're using in your own projects that I didn't talk about. And I'd be really interested to hear about that. And maybe this is a topic that I revisit when I've heard all of your feedback and have more exploration of the space, because I think it really is an important part of the developer and user experience of software, is the way that you take your personal output, the code that you're writing, and turn it into the thing that's actually going to be used by everyone. Anyway, that's it for now. So if you do want to give feedback, my email address is grahamlee@acm.org. I look forward to hearing from you. Stay safe, and I will talk to you again soon.